Network, proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show, with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right. Thank you, DJ Q, the very best producer in the business. And thank you, everybody at GNN. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It's the spiciest, it's the boastless, it's the most flavorful hot sauce out there on the market. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours when it says JB's, it's the best. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nice to have you all again. Golf season is winding down and starting up simultaneously. It's also football season, and we got baseball playoffs going on, basketball and hockey starting up. It's a good time to be a sports fan, and it's a great time to be a golfer, especially in the Northeast with the leaves turning. And so we've got two wonderful guests on the show today. In the second half of the show, we're going to bring up former New York Daily News scribe Hank Gola, who's just written a new book, and he's going to be talking both football and golf with us. But our first guest is one of the great young rising stars in American amateur golf. He just recently competed in the U.S. Amateur, and he's playing out of wonderful Forest Gate Country Club in Monroe Township, New Jersey. Everybody give a warm Jay's Plays welcome to Matt Korkorakis. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Glad to do it. You know, we were all just absolutely glued to the results of the U.S. Amateur that you played in this summer. The entire club was just waiting with bated breath on every single shot, on every single hole. We were so proud of all that you accomplished. So, but for all of us that didn't get a chance to see the Amateur, let's back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got started in the game.
Well, I first want to say thanks for following me during the Amateur. I really appreciate that, all the support. I felt it out there, that's for sure. But I played sports my whole life, starting since I was a little kid, I guess 8 years old, something like that. Never really got into golf until, I guess it was about 10 or 11. My dad took me out to Clearbrook Golf Club. It's in Monroe Township, where Forest Gate is. A little public nine-hole course. Went out there one day, and then loved it, went out another day, and just kind of snowballed from there, and then, you know, here I am.
Did the family play as well? Did all of you go out together and play golf?
No, at first it was just me and my dad. My brother's 2 years younger than me, so he was just a little too young to start playing. Didn't have clubs for him. But then, sure enough, once he grew up, he started coming out with me and my dad, so that kind of blossomed into, you know, a guy's thing that we do every weekend when we're home. So, but my mom doesn't play. My uncle played at, I think it was LIU Brooklyn, when he was in college, but now he is a physical therapist. But, other than that, golf has always just been a recreational sport in the family.
So tell me how you managed to work your way up from the ranks of, you know, 8-year-old beginner to U.S. amateur qualifier and contestant just what, maybe like 11 years later?
Honestly, it was just pure passion. I really do enjoy playing golf, and that's one of the reasons I think I've gotten so successful at it, is because I actually enjoy going out and playing and practicing. I'm not forced to. My parents are really good at that. They never made me go practice. They never made me do anything I didn't really want to do. So all the passion I have for the sport and all the hours I put in is really because I love the game. And I think that's just the purest way to get better, is to do something you really enjoy.
And tell me a little bit about some of your coaches and the teams that you've played on as well.
Yeah, so I would say the biggest coach I've had has just been my dad. He's not a great golfer. I think he's gotten himself down to a 10 handicap most recently. But he doesn't know much about the golf swing. He's always just been there to kind of help me and suggest little things here or there. When I got into high school, Coach Kelleher, he's a high school geometry teacher and the golf coach there.
At which school?
Monroe Township High School, sorry. He would give me little pointers here or there. And then when I got to college, I really didn't have a swing coach until this past winter. Dan Braun, our assistant coach, he really helped me out. Didn't change too much of my swing, but helped me become more consistent. And I can't help but think that's one of the reasons I was able to hold up down the stretch of the U.S. Amateur qualifier and kind of help get me there.
How old were you when you first broke par?
Oh, geez. Honestly, I don't think it was until junior year of high school, maybe senior year for an 18-hole round. Yeah, probably. I'm kind of a late bloomer. I think I started a little bit later than most kids that are at the level I am now. But I also think that gives me more room to grow than them. So I haven't broken par until I was late in high school.
So were you sought after by a lot of colleges? What was the process by which you ended up where you are now?
I was the first, I'm the oldest in the family. I was the first one to go through the whole recruiting process. And like I said, I was a late bloomer. Now, I didn't really start playing well until my junior year of high school. And then by that point, all the D1 programs kind of had been scouting out their players for a while. I didn't get into any of the big AJGA events, which is what D1 programs want. I played NJSGA junior events, and that kind of steered me toward a couple of small Division III schools, Eastern University, which is where I went my freshman year, and Manhattanville College, which is up in Purchase, New York. They basically both reached out to me, went on a couple visits, and ended up at Eastern my freshman year.
And then what happened after your freshman year at Eastern?
Yeah, it was a little too small for me. It just wasn't the right fit. It was close to home, which is what I liked, or which I thought I wanted. And I thought it was just the right size for me, but I guess what I thought I wanted in high school wasn't what I really wanted once I got to college. And then about halfway through my first semester there, I realized that I might not want to come back for another year. So I basically started going through the transfer process, reaching out to different coaches and whatnot, and then IUP popped up on the map. They had the major I wanted, their competitive school, and I reached out to the coach, and, it all worked out.
For you listeners out there, IUP is Indiana University of Pennsylvania, located, about 50 miles east of Pittsburgh? Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're about an hour outside of Pittsburgh. I always get the same questions. Where do you go to school? What does IUP stand for, and where is it? So I'm pretty used to giving directions out there.
See, I know that because I spent a week at IUP when I covered the U.S. Open in 2016.
Oh, really?
At Oakmont. Yes, somebody who did my booking was geographically challenged and thought that IUP was much closer. But I did get two wonderful runs in the town. I did a 7-mile run and a 10-mile run during the course of the week. So I got to see plenty of the campus, and I got to see plenty of the cool little town and that little, walking area, the cobblestone area. It's kind of a cool little place, and it's rather scenic, too. So, plus, Pittsburgh's right there, and Pittsburgh is one of the great cities of the world, capital G, capital C, capital W. Have you had a chance to play any of Pittsburgh's great courses yet?
Not really. Unfortunately, the program doesn't really have many connections with, Oakmont or big courses like that. But we are getting a new head coach in the spring, and, who knows, maybe he'll have some connections with some big courses there. But I think it'd be really cool if we could get on Oakmont before I graduate, or even there's a bunch of other beautiful courses in the area as well.
Yeah, I'll throw out two good names. Fox Chapel and Pittsburgh Field Club are both world-class as well.
Okay, I've heard of Fox Chapel. I've heard really good things.
They're both excellent architecturally, okay? If you're going to get good at this game, you got to study golf course architecture. You probably know that it saves you a couple of strokes around, because if you recognize a feature out there, you're going to be able to either use it to your advantage or know to stay away from it, okay? And Fox Chapel is a McDonald Rainer Banks course, okay, much like our beloved Forsgate is. So that's a definite reason you should put that on the list. Pittsburgh Field Club was recently restored by Keith Foster, the same guy who did Philly Cricket Club, and it's getting wonderful reviews. It features an 18th hole, which is a par 3, that you take an elevator 200 feet in the air. because the 17th green is 200 feet below on a cliff. Yeah, it's super cool. So, but this is a great story, Matt, because, you know, here you are playing out of a small college. It's kind of an unheralded amateur career, like you said, a late bloomer. And then all of a sudden, not only are you going toe-to-toe with the very best amateurs in the game and these college stars from all these, you know, big-money D1 programs, you know, you're competing head-to-head and keeping up with them. So tell us a little bit about how you came from being, you know, one of the outsiders to competing in the amateur. How did you make it through the qualifying process and, you know, hit all of the milestones for us?
Yeah, when I first started playing junior golf, I didn't really know any of the big tours or anything like that. Like I said, I played local state junior events. It wasn't the caliber that these D1 programs are looking for. But one thing I've always believed, and I think my dad has instilled in me, is just because you're not playing in those big events or big tours doesn't mean you don't have the game. And that's kind of something that kind of taught me to carry a little bit of chip on my shoulder. You know, I believe that if you don't believe in yourself, then who should believe in you? So I've always had faith in myself and my game. And I think during that USAM qualifier, you know, the name, the school that you went to, or how good you were 2 years ago, or what accomplishments you have prior to that event, it doesn't mean anything. The golf ball doesn't know who's hitting it. So as long as you put a good stroke on the ball, the ball is going to react how you want. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you shoot low enough, you're going to get in. That's just what happened.
So what course hosted the amateur at which you qualified?
It was Echo Lake Country Club, which is ironic because I just played in the state amateur there. I played 4 rounds in the state amateur there. It was like 2 or 3 days prior. So I got a really good look at the course, went home, relaxed a little bit, you know, practiced at Forest Gate, and then got back out there in a few days and played well.
What did you shoot, and by how many strokes did you qualify, and how many guys ended up going to the Open from that qualifier?
It was a par 71. I shot 68-71. So it was a 3-under total, and 3-under was the cut line. There was the medalist was at 5-under, and there was two of us at 3-under, and three guys got in, so I made it right on the number. And of course, last putt of the day, I had a nice little 4-footer left to righter that I had to make. So it was pretty, I knew I was right near the cut line. I honestly think I thought I needed one more birdie. So it was a par putt and I didn't think much of it, but I just put a good stroke on it and I guess it went in.
Yeah, that's what I tell all of my pals, okay? Just put a good stroke on it. They go in more often than you think if you trust it. All right, so tell us a little bit about your preparation for the YAM, and then, you know, walk us through the whole thing, getting out there, landing, getting set up, you know, and competing.
Yeah, so the day I played, it was 36 holes of qualifier in one day, and it was a good 95 degree day, so I was exhausted after the day. But, you know, in reality, set in quick next morning, like, everyone else is going to be out there practicing, so I got to be too. So I didn't take a day off. I went right out there the next morning, worked on my short game and whatnot. I did that for a solid month. I think I had about 3.5-4 weeks between the qualifier and the U.S. amateur. So I got a lot of practice in. I made sure I used every day, took advantage of every day. And then we headed out, I believe it was Friday. We left Newark Airport at like 6 o'clock in the morning, something like that. Got out there Friday afternoon to San Fran, took a 2.5-hour drive down to Pebble, hit balls in the range before it got dark. I got to walk a few of the holes on Pebble, which was, you know, just breathtaking when you see it for the first time.
Oh yeah.
And then Saturday I got a practice round in at Spyglass. Sunday a practice round in at Pebble, which was probably the coolest experience of it all, because you can actually soak in the course and soak in your surroundings without having to worry about what score you're posting.
Three words: 8, 9, 10.
Yeah. Well, I actually I started my final round on the 10th at Pebble. So that, how about that for a first hole? I had to hit a driver with a cliff hanging on the right, and then an approach shot with all you see is the beach on the right. The ball's hanging below your feet, and you just pray it doesn't go right.
Alright, so I gotta know. I gotta know. Yeah. What was the last thought through your head as you stood on the tee ready to hit that ball?
The first tee?
Yeah, well, the 10th tee, but yeah. Okay, you know, well, that moment. You know that moment. That moment when everything goes quiet and they're all waiting for you to lean over and peg it up.
Yeah, well, I actually played my first competitive round at the U.S. Amateur at Spyglass. So that was probably the most nervous I was. I mean, I couldn't tell you what I did. After I put the ball on the ground, like the peg on the ground, I basically blacked out until after I hit the ball. I mean, I've been there.
Okay, not in a U.S. Amateur, but I have been there. I know that feeling. So,
yeah.
Well, how was your first drive?
Oh, I blocked it like 40 yards right into the trees. But it was just a completely nervous swing, which was understandable. I fought hard. I ended up bogeying the first hole, but I fought back. And overall, it was. The experience, being my first time at a U.S. Amateur, I hope to be back another time or two or in the future. But for me, I wanted to make it to the round of 64, but the experience is invaluable as I move forward.
All right, well, we were going to be coming right back with a second segment in just a couple of minutes. But before we get to that, is there a possibility that you're going to become a professional golfer? And what are you studying in school, just in case you're not?
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about it. I talked to an alumni from IUP this weekend that turned pro, so it's in the back of my mind. But I'm studying accounting, so I'm falling back on that if it doesn't work out.
All right, this is Jay Flemma and our guest Matt Korkorakis. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We'll be right back after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back from the break in style. He's absolutely right. I'm Jay Flemma, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. And welcome back, everybody. Matt Korkorakis is here with us. He just finished competing in the U.S. Amateur, and now he's back at school at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Yep, thanks again for having me, Jay.
All right, so now is the part of the show where I get to ask you a hard trivia question, and you get to get it wrong, or at least that's what it seems
right.
like, unfortunately. it gets a little wild here. We have had two winners, though, recently.
All right, well, let's
so,
start with the challenge.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up here. We get the envelope out. Okay. Oh, your category is football.
All right, I can do that.
All right. Yeah, we got a shot at this one, so let's see what we got here. All right, now I'm going to read you the question twice. Here we go. This former NFL head coach, known for his trademark 10-gallon hat, could never wear it for home games because they were always played indoors, and his mama taught him not to wear it inside. One more time. This former NFL head coach, known for his trademark 10-gallon hat, could never wear it for home games because they were always played inside, and his mama taught him not to wear it inside. Who is he? NFL head coach. Former.
I'm going to say, I'm trying to think of a coach from Texas or something like that, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
10-gallon hat. And if it's indoors, what city did he have to coach in?
Must have been Dallas, I guess, because I think Houston is still outdoors.
Now you're showing your age, kid.
I know. About the only Dallas Cowboys coach I know, unfortunately, is Jason Garrett. I'm not a big Cowboys fan.
All right, well, the answer is Bum Phillips. And I think you got crossed up. You got crossed up, and I'll tell you why. The new stadium in Houston is outdoors, but he never coached in the new stadium. He coached in the Astrodome. And back in the day when he coached, Dallas played in Texas Stadium, which was a completely different venue than what they have now, too. So, yeah, Bum Phillips was known for his 10-gallon hat and his big, big glasses. So, but he could never wear the hat for home games because the Astrodome, you couldn't open up the top of it.
Interesting.
All right, well, we're going to have you back on the show sometime anyway, so you'll get another chance to get stumped by another stupid question. It has nothing to do with golf. We've had a couple of doozies. The literature questions get really out there, given that category.
I thought I would have a chance with football, but I guess I didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, baseball, the baseball questions are tough, too. The last guy that got a baseball question had to pick the team that that pitched the first no-hitter in history. And if I recall correctly, I think it was Cleveland. But anyway, here's a topic that we both know a ton about, especially you, our beloved Forest Gate. Both the Banks course from 1931 and the Palmer course. So tell us a little bit about what are your favorite holes out on the Banks course.
I was actually just thinking about this earlier today, and I would have to go with number 7 on the Banks.
the reverse Redan.
Yeah, when they put that pin down on the back right and you just throw a nice mid-iron out to the middle of the green and watch the ball funnel all the way down there, that's a good feeling.
See, I'm more along the lines that they should stick that pin in the front.
I'd love to watch you guys
land it there and trickle down into the back.
No, I like it right in the back where it's nice and easy to get to.
There aren't too many easy pin placements on that one. So, now, yeah. I've noticed something. Okay, as an expert golfer like you are, you're looking at things a lot more differently than I am. I'm a bogey golfer that's just trying to tack his way around the golf course, and I've noticed something about the Banks course. There's no trouble short. Maybe on the third hole, but that's about it.
Yeah, pretty much every hole you can almost run a ball up to the green, which is something I like about the course. It sets itself up for creative shots. You can work balls on the ground, fly the ball back to the pin, especially when it's hard and dry. You really have to think about the shot you're going to play, the trajectory, the spin, the where you're going to cut it, draw it. It really calls for a lot of imaginativity.
And it's so well conditioned that you can use a putter from far off of the green, all right, because the greens bleed so seamlessly from the fairway into each other. Okay, from 40 or 50 yards off the green, if you've got a good bead on a putt, you know, to a front pin, and you can get that thing to die right at the edge, and it'll trickle forward for you, you can really make a lot of guys' stomachs churn if you're coming down stretching a match for your Nassau and you pull off a shot like that. As you said, creative short game. Okay, another good one is, here's one of the unsung holes. It's nice from time to time to see a short par 4, get its due, but number 15 coming down the stretch is a great way to open the closing run. Okay, because some of you guys might be able to drive that green, but large marge bunker over on the far side there, if you get in that thing and there's a back pin, that's probably one of the hardest bunker shots you'll face anywhere, not just at Forest Gate.
Yeah, I agree. My strategy on that hole is to put it out just short of that bunker, so I leave myself with a nice flip wedge in there, because I don't see the benefit in going for the green. I think you end up in that bunker 9 times out of 10, and then from there you're just struggling to make par.
Exactly, okay. It's very reminiscent of number 10 at Riviera, for example. But that's the beautiful thing about a good short hole. You can make it sexy, okay? And it's interesting. It gives you great variety when you come to 16, which is such a wonderful long hole, but with no bunkers. Well, they brought in the fairway bunker along the left now. But the green itself doesn't have any bunkers, but it's got the three plateaus to it.
Yep. Yeah, you can definitely... It makes you think when you're out there. It looks pretty naive when you're standing on the tee box, but once you start dissecting the hole, you really have to plan out exactly how you're going to play every shot, because if you fall asleep for one shot, you can end up in the wrong tier in a 20-foot bunker or worse.
Sure, and the adventure continues when you get to the green, because all 18 of them are fascinating, whether it's a hog's back like at number 3 or number 4, or a thumbprint like at 12, or, of course, La Pièce de Résistance, okay? One of the two holes that belongs in the great pantheon of golf holes, number 17, the Barrettes.
Oh, yeah. That's always fun to play. When we usually play, I think for the most part they coordinate the tee boxes with where the pins are. So you'll never play a back tee when the pin's all the way back, because then the hole plays about 250 or 260. But they move the tees around a lot and tip, and they can do a lot with that pin. It could play, I've hit 9-iron into there, and I've hit 4-iron. So it's an interesting hole. You really have to wait till you pull up to the tee box to see what type of shot you're going to have to play.
I did see the day that they put the tee all the way back and the pin all the way back. It was the day Brad Faxon played Annika Sorenstam.
Right. They usually do that for those pro matches, try and make them look a little foolish, but not for us amateurs. We can't handle that yet.
Well, they Annika made a 3 and Faxon made a 4, and that was the difference in their match, that one shot.
Really?
But the thing that I remember walking up, okay, this was when they were having that big contest to see who was going to build the Olympic golf course down in Rio. Okay, you'll remember
right.
Annika and Jack Nicklaus had a bid. And it's like every architect got teamed up with a celebrity, it seemed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just happened to be a fly on the wall when Faxon's walking up the fairway with Annika, and he's pointing out the Barrettes, and he's pointing out the tusk bunkers, and he's pointing out the mounds, and she's just going, And then he stops in his tracks, and he looks at her, and he goes, Annika, if you're going to design golf courses, you got to know this stuff.
Yeah, that green is definitely a famous one. You should definitely know that if you're going to design a course.
Well, of all the Barrettes I've seen, the only one that I can think of that rivals it, Yale's is magnificent as well, but ours stands shoulder to shoulder with any in the country. And I love our short, okay? The perfect horseshoe at number 12 is just...
Mm-hmm.
It's puckish, and yet it's brilliant, okay? You sit there with a short iron or a wedge in your hands, and your stomach is still in knots, and your heart's in your throat, because, you know, as
yeah.
you said once before, one wrong move and you're on the wrong tier, or you're in a bunker, which is worse.
Yeah, and it's fun. That's what makes it exciting. You can't really let your guard down for one shot, because then all of a sudden you walk off with a double bogey before you blank. It really makes it a fun course to play.
All right, last question before we let you go. You brought three buddies with you to play the Banks course that have never seen it before. Give me three other of your favorite shots that you're going to show them around the course that we haven't already talked about.
Well, I definitely make them hit a putt from the front of the green on 17 to the back pin. That's always fun to do, get closest to the
yep.
contest there. I would probably put them in the bunker left of 8.
Oh, like absolutely.
Bunker. See who can get it up there, or see how many shots it takes to get out.
You read my mind.
I would also probably put them on the 4th tee box and see how many have the guts to try and drive that green and knock it over that shoulder that pops out on the right side, and how many decide to lay up short of it.
All good choices. You read my mind on number 8. Another one that I like to have them drop a ball in is on number 9, the Sea of Tranquility bunker set at the base
yep.
of that green, especially playing to a pin tucked left. Oh, that is a scary golf shot. Okay, one time in the Riders Championship, okay, I was about 150 yards out, and I took out my putter, and I putted it way right, way up into the neck. They go, what are you doing? I go, I'm not going to risk putting it in that bunker. No way,
no.
Man. Are you nuts?
That's a two-shot penalty once you go in there.
Possibly.
That's a very tough shot.
I've also given a name to the bunker left of 8. That's Black Lung Bunker, because you can get black lung disease trying to get out of that thing.
Oh, yeah. A lot of sand coming up when you end up down there.
And then I love the feeling that you get when you reach the 5th green. You know, that's a take a deep breath and soak it in moment right there.
Yeah. I love how it's a nice little punch bowl green. And the approach shot, it's blind. It's very tough to tell where your ball ends up once you get up there. So you're kind of holding your breath, hoping you're on the right tier when you get up there. But it is a very cool green.
And the reverse camber of the terrain works beautifully well there, testing both accuracy and distance control as well. And then, yes, the approach shot up into that. It's so much bigger than it looks. And I love how it is all but unique. I can only think of one other reverse punch bowl, and what I mean by that is where the bowl is the surround, not the green itself. But that's one of the charms that you know, gives Fortiscate its indelible character. You know, and then, of course, you know, that moment when you're hitting that final approach to 18, you know, and then, oh, man, I got this downhill, side-hill putt to finish the day on. Oh.
Yep.
Because you went too far past the too far right. It's
it
a
easy.
Great finish. Well, Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show. Congratulations. Please come back and visit us. Let us all know, where can we keep up with all of your golf exploits? Have you got a website or a blog or something?
Not me, but if you follow the school and have an athletics page, I believe it's iupcrimsonhawks.com. You can read up on the golf team, how we're doing this year. And if one of us do play well over the summer, they typically do highlight us in their articles. So if there is one place to find more information on me, it'd probably be on that website, iupcrimsonhawks.com.
All right, everybody, we're going to come back with Hank Gola. This is Jay Flom. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Plays show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as the theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJQ.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.